Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit and nonpartisan forum open to the public. To attend a Commonwealth Club event, check out our program listing at www.commonwealthclub.org. Now we join today's program of the Commonwealth Club.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our program of the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley and Santa Clara University School of Engineering. My name is Jim Cook, and I will be your chair for today. It is my sincere pleasure to introduce Mike Splinter, President and CEO of Applied Materials. Mike is a 30-year veteran of the semiconductor industry and has been at the forefront of many of the industry's most significant technology innovations. As an engineer and technologist, Mike began his career at Rockwell International in the firm's Electronics Research Center. He later spent 20 years at Intel Corporation, where he served as executive in charge of worldwide manufacturing and as head of sales and marketing. Mike is a member of the Technology CEO Council, a select group of 9 high-tech CEOs who are driving new U.S. federal policies. He also chairs the board of directors of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group and serves on the Governor's Council of the World Economic Forum, a knowledgeable group of influential and forward-thinking business, government, media, and intellectual leaders dedicated to sustaining economic and social prosperity worldwide. Mike is driving Applied Materials' entry into the solar industry, where the company's nanomanufacturing expertise in semiconductors and flat panel displays has the potential to drive the cost of solar electricity generation to a much lower level. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Mike Splinter.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. It's a bright day. I'm very pleased to be here today with the ability to share with you our vision of the future of solar energy and really what this country needs to do to regain the leadership in this important field. And in doing so, create a bright future for the environment and the economy. In the time we are in this room today, just sitting here, the sun will deliver enough energy to power all of the world's needs for a year. It's phenomenal, I think, to even consider this. But what if we could harness this resource to do just that? It's clean, it's plentiful, it's free energy that recognizes no national borders. And the day that we do, at least a much bigger percentage of it, is certainly drawing closer with every new invention and new idea in the alternative energy field. Does this sound ambitious? Yeah. Will it be really hard to do? Is it going to take a lot of new thinking, new ideas, and problem solving? Of course. But where others see problems, engineers see opportunities. That's a great thing about engineering. And opportunities for solutions, and that's why I came to an engineering school today to talk about this subject. In Silicon Valley, engineers have lots of ambitions. They solve difficult things that have given the world amazing products and amazing solutions. And if there was ever a problem that's been in search of a Silicon Valley solution, it is electricity generation. And the world needs your help to get it done, because the world needs a lot of electricity and will need much more to power the economies of the world as they grow. I want to thank the Commonwealth Club today and Dr. Gloria Duffy, Father Paul Locatelli. I'm not sure where Paul is sitting, but thank you so much. Jim Cook, the School of Engineering, and all of you who are here today to join us to talk about this subject. Applied Materials has had a long partnership with Santa Clara University, and it's great to be here this morning to kick off Earth Day weekend. It sounds a little bit like an oxymoron, a day versus a weekend, but since Earth Day is falling on a Sunday, I'm not sure any of you wanted to come to this meeting on Sunday afternoon when I'm sure you'll be out planting trees or doing something else great for the earth. But it is time for the citizens of the world to get serious about clean energy, in particular solar power. You know, polls show that 77% of the American public thinks the nation should do more to promote clean energy. And 87% of the people believe government incentives for solar are a smart idea. And there's good reason. Solar is simple and an elegant solution to a huge problem, a distributed, perpetual source of energy, and the first form of manufactured energy readily available to almost anyone. I'm confident that the more people understand it and realize its potential, the more they will help speed its adoption. Commercially viable, widely adopted solar is truly just a few ticks of the clock away. But we have to devote the best and brightest minds to accomplish that. But with commitment to support the effort, and we have to get going now on this effort, today, right here, because the planet's clock is ticking. And I hope that ticking is the heartbeat of the planet and not something much worse. You know, despite conservation and efforts and energy reduction efforts around the globe, demand for electrical power today is still rising at an alarming rate. Today, the world uses 5,000 gigawatts of electrical power generation each year. That's 5 terawatts. Sadly, solar provides significantly less than 0.1% of that power. But about $1 trillion, that's a lot of money, $1 trillion will be spent on building new electrical generation capability around the world in 2007. And we should direct more of this investment to clean energy. If your neighborhood, consider this for a moment, has a choice, if you could just take a vote and pick, would you rather have a coal-fired plant, wind turbines, maybe a nuclear power plant in your backyard, or some solar panels? What's the take here? Well, as safe as nuclear power may be these days, and as easy as coal is, given the choice, I know what I would pick. And I think I know what you would pick as well. I think you would pick solar. 1 gigawatt coal plant emits CO2 that's equivalent to more than 1 million cars. If solar can be substituted for the next 10 or 15 coal plants that are currently being planned in the United States, the environmental benefit would be incredible. Excuse me. Solar can be affordable, can be clean and secure. It doesn't carry political baggage. The fuel is free and pervasive. The panels are relatively simple. You know, they have no moving parts. There's minimal maintenance, long life. Solar doesn't require an extensive grid, and it takes advantage of unused space on rooftops to put power directly where it's needed. And there are a lot of good reasons to adopt solar. You know, so what are we waiting for? If you walk away with one thought today, I hope you'll agree that we have to stop making excuses. As an engineer, I was trained not to give excuses, but to solve problems and to create opportunities. And I believe that's what engineers are being trained for today. So it's time to start doing the hard work to make solar cost competitive and put the sun to use. Solar cells, or photovoltaics as they're known, were discovered about the same time as photography. Now, you may not know this, but photography was discovered in the mid-19th century. Not the mid-20th century, the mid-19th century. Now, clearly, photography has made huge technology advances and shifted media from chemical film to digital memory. Widespread adoption drove affordability, which in turn expanded the global market till today, I think, every one of us has a camera. But nearly a century and a half after the discovery of solar energy, we're still waiting for it to deliver on the promised potential. And that's a challenge for engineers and innovators who want to make a significant contribution to solving the world's energy problems. Solar cells, on average, are only 15% efficient, meaning that 85% of the sun's rays that impinge on a solar cell are not converted into electricity. Another issue with solar has been its cost. In the United States, we've been so lucky to have low energy costs. Solar power installed on a home costs today between 25 and 45 cents per kilowatt hour versus 8 cents for that same kilowatt hour produced by oil or gas, and only 2 cents for a conventional coal plant. But the cost of these other sources go up when you add the cost of transmission, peak power, disposal of the fuel, and someone is paying for the environmental impact. I think maybe we are all paying for the environmental impact. Fortunately, with new technology and experience from other industries, we have the opportunity to deliver the scale that solar needs to catch up. With innovation, we can provide an inflection point for the solar industry to unleash new growth by raising the efficiency of cells and lowering the cost per watt to make solar competitive with all other sources of electricity generation. Today, there are two primary approaches to making solar cells. The majority are manufactured on 6 to 8 inch silicon wafers, very similar to those that are used in making ICs, integrated circuits, chips. They are then cut into squares, pieced together on panels, and voila, you see the solar panels that you see today. Another way to make panels is to coat big sheets of glass or other materials like plastic with thin films of silicon or other solar-sensitive materials. When you deposit these on the top surface, they then create the solar cell. Here we can utilize the innovation and expertise used in making flat panel TVs or displays. But both approaches are tied to the experience of Silicon Valley and the core capabilities of companies like Applied Materials that makes the equipment that helps make virtually every chip and flat panel LCD TV in the world. Another key to lower manufacturing costs and shorten the time to market of these photovoltaic innovations is to focus on the way solar factories operate. In our 40 years of providing equipment and service to some of the most technologically demanding and fast-moving customers in the world, Applied has built a global innovation and manufacturing capability that is unmatched in the solar arena today. We work with some of the most sophisticated manufacturing plants and can contribute by dramatically improving solar production. The latest generation of our tools can pattern 6 50-inch TVs on a single sheet of glass, a glass substrate. Now, put that into your mind. This glass substrate is not just this big. It's bigger than this. It's almost the size of a garage door, and getting bigger, actually. And that technology and manufacturing expertise can directly be applied to scale up solar cell production. To achieve pricing parity with conventional power generation will require the solar industry to make performance and manufacturing improvements by a factor of 2 to 5 times. That, of course, is going to be hard. But over the 40 years, we have worked to lower the cost of chip making several thousand times. Our flat panel manufacturing system have lowered the cost, helped our customers lower the cost of making flat panel TVs by over 20 times in the last 10 years. These accomplishments give me the confidence that the same can be done in the solar energy field. Innovation is and will be spurred by the current large flow of investment capital into this area, more than $1 billion over the last year. That entrepreneurs are getting the backing they need to bring new ideas to market. And that means the innovation engine of Silicon Valley, whether in garages or large companies, has begun to go to work on the solar problem in a real way. With so many avenues to explore, from material science to deposition equipment, there is tremendous opportunity to drive the cost of solar down at a faster rate. Solar reminds me very much of the early days of the semiconductor industry. It's a little bit of the Wild West when the predictions for growth were surpassed with each new innovation. Solar can be a similar explosive opportunity when you consider the pent-up demand for electricity and the desire for energy independence by almost every country around the world. So I think we can do this, and we need to get going now. But solar is already a real business. Solar cell market is about $15 billion globally today and growing to an expected $50 billion by 2010. Solar shipments have been growing at a compounded annual growth rate of 40% since 2001. And the potential of growth in the future is really, really large. Today in the U.S., all forms of renewable energy supply only 2% of the total. With roughly 20 gigawatts of additional capacity needed every year in the United States alone, the world needs about 2,000 new gigawatts or 2 terawatts of electrical power to meet its needs over the next 10 years. If just 5% of that total becomes solar, it means a $150 billion investment in solar facilities over that period of time. With such a large opportunity, new companies and investors are stepping forward to grow the solar industry. Last year, the solar industry added 2 gigawatts of panel production to bring the installed base of solar to 8 gigawatts total worldwide. If solar expands at today's growth rates of 40%, we can bring on new panel production to raise the total installed base to about 25 gigawatts by 2010. This will equate to approximately $3 billion of capital spending, up from the $1 billion last year. So solar seems like a great opportunity. So where's the risk? I believe the risk and the danger is in not moving fast enough, in not moving decisively enough. Applied Materials has been strategically developing solar capability for several years now, creating products and assembling a strong team of solar industry professionals. And as these elements gelled into place, last September we announced our entry into the market. And we have been moving very fast since then. We have found ourselves in the right place at the right time with the right products and people and technology. Applied has begun working with customers in Germany, in China, in India, even in Spain, on a number of new production lines that we're helping those customers set up. In fact, these production lines that we will add by the end of next year expect to add 20% more generation capacity to the world's solar capability. Now, I'm sure you noticed none of these new plants are in the United States, and I think that needs to change. Our leaders and politicians in this country need to step up in a nonpartisan way, much like our governor is doing here in the state of California. The United States should be the leader in this technology. There is a huge environmental consciousness here. We have tremendous industrial capability, vast geography favorable to solar, and a history of innovation. Yet today, our government's energy policy is essentially the same as it was in 1981. For many of you, it was long before you were born. However, for some of us, we were already old by that time. So, how can we all get behind solar and other forms of clean energy and make them a more meaningful component of the global energy supply? I believe there are four critical elements. The first, of course, we need to build demand by lowering costs. This is a tried and true formula in Silicon Valley. When you take innovation, you drive it into lower costs. Through technology transformation, we can open up huge new markets and put futuristic technology into the hands of ordinary citizens around the world. This is what we must do with solar. We must lower the capital cost per watt of solar power to competitive levels and let market demand scale. At Applied Materials, this is the focus of our solar efforts, and I'm confident we and other companies like us will make tremendous progress here. Second, we must align public policy to kickstart solar and help it reach critical mass as an energy alternative. Congress should extend the federal tax credit for solar power as soon as possible and deliver greater certainty in the form of an 8-year term for the credit. And that will spur investment. This is a chance to create jobs in the U.S. that otherwise will go to other countries. Good-paying jobs across the entire spectrum, from engineers, scientists, architects, people who install these panels, manufacturing jobs that have export potential. According to the Solar Energy Industry Association, extending the solar tax credit could bring as many as 55,000 new jobs and more than $45 billion in economic investment. It will also mean billions of dollars in new tax revenues. We should also give all Americans equal rights to access solar. A bill now in Congress would establish national interconnection and net metering standards, guarantee solar siting rights, cap installation permitting fees, and enable federal agencies to enter into long-term renewable energy contracts. This is a strong step in the right direction. Net metering, for example, is the ability to connect up to the grid and have your meter essentially turn backwards, feeding power back into the utility. In California, Governor Schwarzenegger's plans to put 3 kilowatts of capability on each of 1 million rooftops. His plan would save the need to build 3 fossil fuel energy plants and eliminate millions of tons of carbon spewed into the atmosphere and should be replicated in the other 49 states around the country. After all, what are people waiting for? Local government. Well, indeed, all levels of government can support large-scale projects that take advantage of lower installation costs and shorter payback times. And they don't need to look beyond their own roofs. Our country is the biggest user of electrical energy. And within our country, the biggest user of electrical energy it's probably no surprise, is our government. Only a small percentage of the electricity that they use today comes from renewable sources. Every level of government can demand electricity from renewable sources from their power company. We can do it here in Santa Clara. Even better, every large rooftop in the U.S. should be a candidate for solar. And as taxpayers, we own a lot of government rooftops. A lot. Setting the example at the local, state, and national level by upping the renewable energy utilized by the government to 25% of the total over the next 10 years should be the minimum requirement. I can't imagine what that would do to renewable energy, not only in this country, but around the world. Third, education plays a critical role. And it's up to all of us in industry and academia to let people know that we can make solar power possible, and soon. Now is the time for professors and students to get excited about solar and other alternative energies. It's one of those times, an inflection point, if you will, when we are going to ask a generation of engineers to tackle a challenge with a huge payback, this time for the planet and for our future. The environment is the problem of our time, of your time. Santa Clara's engineering focus on clean tech is a great start and a smart move for this university. Certainly, companies like ours are going to be looking for the students that graduate from these programs and gain experience from hands-on work like the Solar Decathlon. If I was starting my career today, wanting to make a difference, I'd be looking at alternative energy as a great career and a great discipline. Fourth, we must all lead by example. Applied Materials is, and we are challenging others to do the same. We are adding nearly 2 megawatts of solar generating capability on our Silicon Valley campus, turning unused rooftop space into a good-sized power plant. And companies like Walmart, Google, and a growing list of other corporations are getting on board. Every rooftop in the United States that receives good sunlight is an opportunity to create clean, quiet, pollution-free power at a cost that can be affordable. And as the cost drops, homeowners and small business can follow suit. And finally, we can all play a part by advocating solar and clean energy. America has waited too long, and now we have to get impatient. Tell your government representatives that you want them to pay attention to solar and do something to help. America is behind the rest of the world in solar adoption, and that's just not acceptable. We must implement comprehensive renewable energy plans at local, state, and federal levels and learn from countries like Germany and Japan, who have used policies so successfully to make progress in solar. As a businessman, a citizen, a father, grandfather, I believe solar is key to our nation's future and is an enormous opportunity for the United States to once again show global leadership on the environment, reassert our innovative spirit, and create a strong growth industry with billions in revenue and thousands of jobs. In the words of authors Dan Estee and Andrew Winston, we can turn green into gold. But we are starting from behind, with other nations a substantial distance ahead. Now, we can't let that discourage us or slow us down. Quite the opposite, really. We should see it as a challenge. It should kindle a sense of urgency to drive forward and propel new ideas and technology to solve technical and commercial issues still facing this industry. Silicon Valley's success has been a result of the ability to spot and take advantage of emerging new markets. We are at one of those inflection points today also. The time is right. Solar is ready to take off. Some of the world's top business leaders have called solar the greatest opportunity ever. It certainly is a huge opportunity for Silicon Valley with its innovative culture, global reach, and infrastructure. To make that true, though, I need to enlist your help to face the challenges ahead and do something that's hard but rewarding. And help make solar power and clean energy a meaningful part of the world's electricity. Imagine if a quarter of the world's power was generated by solar. If we really used the sun, this would change the equation for our planet, create a bright future, and dramatically improve the outlook for the environment. I know we can do this. I hope you want to get involved. We need our best on this challenge, and I invite all of you to join in and make a difference. Thank you very much. Gloria?
Thank you. And my mic is on. Thank you very much. Well, thank you so much, Mike. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the Commonwealth Club. Very happy to be here. And what a profound talk. We've heard government leaders, we've heard advocates talk about solar energy. I don't believe I've ever heard a major corporate leader speak about it in such a profound and committed way. So thank you very much for those words.
Oh, thank you, Gloria.
And I don't think we need to worry about today not being Earth Day, because our new motto is Earth Day is every day. We have many questions for the audience, but I'd like to start out with one of my own. You and I are both old enough to have lived through the 70s when we had the oil shocks and the euphoria of expectation that alternative energy would become a major part of the energy economy. And then oil got cheaper and the OPEC got more viable as far as a partner. And those hopes faded away. What do you think will be different about the period ahead of us so we can actually operationalize the vision that you set out for solar energy?
Well, Gloria, I think there's several things that are different today than in 1978. I'm sure you remember gas lines in 1978, 79, when gas was scarce, unavailable, created a lot of movement towards alternative forms of energy. But today, number one biggest difference is solar energy and other forms of alternative energy are really much, much closer to a cost parity than they were 30 years ago. 30 years of progress on driving the cost down have occurred. And people are willing to pay a little bit more to ensure that they have clean sources of, and renewable sources of energy. I think there's another factor that has certainly come about in the last few years, and that's the environmental consciousness. And whether you agree that there is a global warming problem or there is not a global warming problem, I'd encourage everybody to do their own analysis on that. I believe that fundamentally, people are more concerned about pollution, more concerned about the damage we're doing to our planet, and concerned about future generations' ability to live here. And I think the confluence of those elements, along with the same element that we had back in the 70s, will allow a real progress in the next 10 years in this area.
So one of the factors you just mentioned, that the technology is closer now. What is the timeline? I know that Applied Materials is involved in setting up production lines for thin film solar. technology. What's the timeline? When can we expect to see some of these new plastic or thin film solar materials actually coming on the market and becoming available?
Well, we'll see a substantial number next year on a global basis, and those panels will find their way into the United States as well. So it's really just on the horizon. And the volume there will scale up. And you might ask, well, why thin film versus other forms? Mm-hmm. And the basic difference is silicon is expensive and glass is cheap or plastic is cheap. And as I said during the talk, the cost per watt has to be driven down to be competitive. And that's one of the key things on the path to driving the cost down.
So just for those who don't know too much detail about what Applied Materials is doing, exactly what are you doing? What is your stake in this industry? You are setting up production lines, as you mentioned, in Germany, China, India, and so on. So what exactly, where are they? What are they producing? What will their path to market be?
So our role is to develop equipment and the process technology, the manufacturing process, to make the panels. We do not make the panels ourselves. Our customers would be the ones who then operate those factories, make the panels, and sell them into the various channels, to homes, to power companies, to industry, to governments around the world.
So you're helping them set up production lines, or you're setting up production lines that reflect those efficiencies drawn from Silicon Valley experience and so on.
Oh, that's right. And we're also counting on new innovations. Our engineers are hard at work trying to create new ideas to make our machines more efficient, the depositions better, the efficiency of the cells better over a period of time.
I was thinking in the back of my mind as you were talking about the affordability of solar equipment mimicking what happened with semiconductors, that maybe there's a splinter's law in our future to parallel.
Well, maybe
Moore's
somebody
law.
Else's law, but I do think that the driving down the cost through technology is a fundamental concept that's been around with technology for more than 40 years. Gordon Moore observed that in semiconductors, and that prophecy has been able to become true over a very, very long period of time and has driven wide adoption of integrated circuits by the billions.
As today, I'm sure will be the case with Splinter's Law. There are a number of questions. Of course, the solar collection technology is one aspect of providing solar energy. Then there's the storage issue.
Yes.
So obviously there are cloudy days. There are days when solar energy is not directly available and you need to draw on batteries or some other storage technology. So a couple people want to know, A, is Applied thinking of getting into that sector, into that part of the market? And if not, what's happening with battery technology, and are there going to be commensurate improvements in the storage technology?
Well, you're right. The storage technology is an important factor here. It's particularly important because the sun doesn't shine in every location all the time. So a couple of things are happening. One, this solar bill that's going through Congress that will eventually do interconnection of the grid across the U.S. You can think of the grid in a sense as a storage device because it can deliver sun-generated electricity to areas where the sun is no longer shining. But storage is also incredibly important on local installations, and there needs to be huge improvement in fuel cells and battery technology. And we are investing in some battery companies. We're looking fuel cell companies. We're looking at ideas where we could help there, but we have not yet found that idea that's really going to propel the storage capability up and the cost down. Although fuel cells are getting much, much better than they were just a few years ago, that technology is moving along rapidly.
Mm-hmm. if you had to pick, would fuel cell technology be the path that you see as the storage technology of the future?
Well, I think so. There's other things called flow cells and other technologies that people are working on. But if I had to pick right now, yes.
Several people also wanted to know about what kind of pollution is generated in the production of solar panels, in general, how sustainable are the materials used to make solar panels? And I guess I would add my question, if there are sustainability issues, how is any pollution being mitigated, and should it be mitigated in manufacturing processes?
Sure. So inside our company, in general, I don't have a summary number of carbon equivalents per watt of electricity generated, but in the manufacturing process for both thin film and silicon solar cells, water is used to clean the surfaces. Silane is used to deposit films. Some fluorine, a significant amount of fluorine is used. And there's a few other chemicals plus electricity, and that's about it. Now, one of the things that Applied Materials has been doing that we started part of our business a few years ago was to create abatement equipment to ensure that none of the effluent that our equipment produces is dispersed into the air or into the water. We have liquid abatement equipment as well. And so this is part of our overall company-wide work to make our equipment use less electricity, use less resources, but the resources that and the waste that are created to ensure that they're abated before entering the environment.
This is a question that might be on the minds of people in Silicon Valley at companies about how to move their companies and their business parallel to what you have done. So you've obviously gone through a process inside Applied Materials where you've evaluated your business as it was, so semiconductor manufacturing technology or nanotechnology manufacturing technology. You've looked at how that could be transferable, and you've moved your company around to a new business area. Can you describe that process at all? And what would you recommend to others in the Valley, particularly, who are thinking about making the kind of change that you talked about to being part of this solar energy revolution?
So every company is a little different, but from this is more of a business question than maybe an environment question, but from our standpoint, when we looked at our business a few years ago, we have very, very good business in semiconductor equipment and service, a very good business in display equipment and service. But our share was large, and the market growth, during the 90s, these markets were growing at 30 or 40%. The size has gotten large, and now they're growing closer to 10%. And so it's hard for us to take market share because we always already have large market share. And in executive team meetings, asked ourselves, well, the shareholders want us to grow revenue and profitability. What are we going to do? And that's where we started to establish some principles around what we were going to do. First of all, we set a vision for the company and kind of coined a word of nanomanufacturing technology to give a name to all the different kinds of capabilities and technologies that were inside the company. And then we said, well, what we want to do with that is improve the way people live. Because if we keep focused on improving the way people live, it's not only a noble cause, but it will be a very good economic cause, because those markets will, in the end, be large for the company to address. And we started to look at a number of different areas of where we could utilize our technology. Now, one other element here was that we were committed to utilize the core competencies of applied materials to apply to other markets and not get too far afield. In part, it's why we're really not interested in selling solar modules, because our company is not, it does, has no skill at selling through channels, selling to consumers. We don't have that kind of capability inside our company. We make complex machines, some of the most complex machine tools that you'll ever see in any factory around the world. And we have a global company, global reach. And we know how to do thin films, measure them, take them off, inspect them, do all kinds of things with them like no other company in the world. And we were committed to use those capabilities to find new markets. And then when we went looking, this was one of those that we found, but we really started in the broader energy market, which we think needed transformation and needs transformation. So you might expect more things from applied materials along that line of thinking.
Was it difficult? Anytime you make, I know some of your staff are here,
I don't know, ask them.
Was it a wrenching change? Because what we're really talking about is trying to make this kind of change in the way that people live, what they buy for their energy supplies, and what companies do and how they do it. So was it hard, and were there any techniques you used as the leader of the company to move people to see this?
Well, it's still hard, and because we're really going through this transition at the current time. But, of course, at the beginning, people are doubtful and don't believe, but some do, and they build and get into the organization, and people who are willing to take risks with their career kind of tend to jump in there at first, and as more success comes and good ideas come into the area, the power grows and the attraction grows and the belief that, gee, we can do something new and something different starts to become believable. But you still have to move experienced people into those organizations, and they have to have the willingness to think that it's going to be good for the company, good for their career, and good for the way people live. And so, but people have been very willing across the company in this endeavor to sign up and move, and managers take some of their most valued people and have them move out of their group.
I'm sure your vision is highly motivating, and people feel better and good and better about what they're doing and their work product. What you mentioned, the energy economy in general and the oil companies or oil producing, the oil companies may not be entirely excited about this message and about this direction in the economy. Or do you think that enough of the big oil companies are beginning to see their own future lie with hydrogen fuel cells or other technologies? I mean, how do you expect the oil industry to react or be part of this change?
Well, I think it depends how they define their companies. Do they deliver energy source, or do they deliver oil? And I think those who simply define themselves as the transmitters and refiners of oil will find themselves eventually left behind, because I think today I get a chance to visit, 20 countries a year, and in every country I go to, this is a topic of how are we going to become energy independent, more energy independent. You can see all kinds of activities and different approaches around the world, from Brazil with their focus on creating ethanol from sugar cane, to Germany that's focused very much on solar and creating a solar industry for the country. But everywhere you go, this is a major topic with individuals, government, throughout the country. So I think people are committed to make alternative energy, clean energy, really happen. And so those companies, that oil companies or other energy companies, electrical companies that can get on board and drive I think PG&E has done a fantastic job here. I know the Commonwealth Club has given them a recognition for the excellent work that they've done in driving renewable sources of energy. I'd like to see every one of the companies do that, and I think people will have to.
We have an audience partly composed of students, and so you might expect the question, what careers do you see ahead in this field? What career paths for young engineers, but also students in general?
Well, I think the field is very wide open. I made the analogy during the presentation that this is very much like the chip industry was 30 years ago. And a lot of it is you just want to get a chance, jump in, dive in, and the industry is going to be created. You're going to be part of creating that industry. And whether you're a marketing person interested in sales and business and engineering, I think there's almost every discipline is going to be absorbed into this industry in a very quick and large fashion. It's already a $15 billion industry that could grow by a factor of 10 or 100 in the next 10 to 20 years. So getting into a spot on the ground floor in companies like ours, like PG&E, maybe some of the oil companies, maybe some of the startups that are so pervasive now around Silicon Valley, who knows which ones are going to win, who's got the best technology or idea. But I think it's getting in, finding out what's going on, and start to participate and lend your ideas and creativity to this, because that's how the industry will be formed. There's not going to be a preset formula.
So this question's a tiny bit off the wall, or maybe we should say off the roof, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I had read several years ago that the marriage of nanotechnology and the solar industry could result in photovoltaic clothing and other innovations.
Sure.
How close is this from becoming a reality? In other words, what's the most interesting and far-out application you've heard of photovoltaics?
Yes, actually today you could make solar cells on clothing. I'm not sure what you would do with it.
Power your cell phone?
LEDs, you could light your name across your T-shirt, I suppose. But then we have to have storage, and we have to have batteries embedded in fabric. But I think there are some crazy ideas like that. But I think there's so many more practical ones that a practical one that I could not figure out that I was in Boston last week, and we're driving by, and I was with George Davis, the CFO of our company, and I said, George, look at that. It's a solar-powered trash can. There's solar cells on top of the trash can.
Yeah.
And I said, come on, why? Why are there solar cells on top of the trash can? So what they were doing later came back, and it's on the website for Boston Public Works. The solar energy powers a battery that drives a trash compactor inside this trash can, and it reduces the pickup from once or twice a week to like once a month, and drives down the labor cost of garbage collection dramatically. But I thought, gee, what a fabulous application for solar energy. But you never know. People get great ideas like that, including solar-powered trash cans.
Very cool technology.
Yeah.
You and I were talking a little bit before we started about how your employees are sending you suggestions for greening your company, and I was telling you we have a wiki on the Commonwealth Club's server for people to post ideas about greening the Commonwealth Club. So how can companies and organizations solicit ideas, and what kind of ideas are you getting as you put it out to your employees to green your company?
Well, we've been working on employee involvement in this space for a while, and one of the things we decided to do for this weekend to commemorate Earth Day, or Every Day, was to set a goal for the company to reduce our carbon footprint in real terms by 20% or 50,000 tons of carbon over the next 5 years. Now, the reason we did this was because it was a real goal that employees could get behind and understand and be simple. It doesn't mean we just want carbon-emitting solutions, but all solutions are great. And we decided that we would have a contest with a nice prize to visit, to do an ecotourism trip. But already overnight, there were lots of inputs. One of them was to use LED lighting in our parking lot, which for those of you who don't know, LED lighting versus some of the incandescent forms of lighting are about a 10 to 15x reduction in power per lumen. So you get the same amount of light for a significant reduction in the power usage. And so, you know, we'll take those kind of ideas and see which ones are the best and sort through them and see which ones we can implement. But I think it's really important to get back to the employees as they give suggestions and let them know what you're doing with the suggestions, and also give them as much power for most suggestions to implement them themselves in their work area or their work group.
Terrific. You ended your talk with some thoughts about national policy needed to drive forward this change. Harper's Index reports only 18% of U.S. congressional representatives and senators actually believe global warming exists. So if we have only, say, 10 years or there's urgency to trying to stop climate change, how can we change this level of knowledge and understanding among our national leaders?
Well, Gloria, you know this, I think, maybe even better than I do, but my experience in going to Washington, talking to senators, congresspeople, are that they listen to their constituents. You might think a lot of things about people in our Congress, but they do listen to their constituents. And if you write them a letter, if you talk to them, if you go to their Washington, happen to be in Washington, go to their office or go to their office here, contact their staff people, they will listen. And we have very good representatives. We're so lucky to have great representatives here in this area. And so contact them. Make sure that you express your interest, and that gets them to really go to work and study and understand. That's the best way.
We're getting close to the end of our time here, and I thought we'd spend the last couple minutes talking about national politics. I don't know if you saw Tom Friedman's piece in the New York Times Magazine last Sunday.
It was awfully long, so.
Yes, the New York Times Magazine pieces are long. Not as long as the New Yorker, though. The thrust was that green technology is the key to U.S. competitiveness, and finally that our next president needs to be a green president. Do you agree? Do you see, I'm not asking you to pick favorite candidates or anything, do you see such a candidate among the range? Do you see any candidates among the range? If not, how do we bring home to the range of candidates that, in fact, we do need an attention to green issues, sustainability issues?
I do agree with the general statement. I really fundamentally think that this country needs an overriding goal. It's been a very tough period of time, I think, for our country since 9/11 and trying to protect ourselves from terrorism and the like. But this is a real noble goal that I think can be very bipartisan, can get people of all kinds, young, old, educated, uneducated, to really get together and work on a problem. And it's something that everybody can get involved in. And I would be, whoever the next president is going to be, I would encourage them strongly to set that kind of goal. Do I see somebody? I don't think anybody's taken that mantle yet, other than the former presidential candidate.
And he is out there.
He's still out there speaking every day and driving this issue, and I really applaud him for that. I'm not necessarily the same political persuasion as he is, but he has done a fabulous, fabulous job in raising this issue, raising the awareness on this topic. And even today, if only 18% of Congress believe that global warming, I think if you ask the question a little bit differently about pollution and environmental concern for the next generations, I doubt that anybody can be in denial about that.
Thank you, Mike, not only for what you've said here today, but for what you're doing and the leadership you're providing in practical ways.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Gloria. And I really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Back to Jim Cook.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed today's program of the Commonwealth Club of Silicon Valley and Santa Clara University School of Engineering. Again, we'd like to thank Mike Splitter, President and CEO of Applied Materials, Dr. Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the Commonwealth Club of California, our audience here at Santa Clara University, and those of you joining us on the radio. And now, this meeting is adjourned.